Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Yesterday, a federal appeals court in Texas ruled that state's voter ID law does have a discriminatory effect on minorities and violates the Voting Rights Act, as the plaintiffs claimed. The decision means that Texas will more than likely have to adjust the law to allow those without state-issued IDs, a majority of whom are low-income minorities, to use some other method of ID. But while the court decided the law had the effect of discriminating, it sent it back to a lower court to determine if that was the intent of the law. Let's remind ourselves why that's important. 50 years ago today, President Johnson signed into law the Voting Rights Act because of restrictions that were purposefully put in place to keep blacks from voting. The law outlawed those discriminatory practices and also called for monitoring of the most egregious states. They couldn't make changes to their voting process unless they were approved. Then in 2013, the Supreme Court overturned that provision of the law, and states have not only passed ID laws, but there's a trial in North Carolina asking if a law there reducing early voting days and ending same-day registration is discriminatory, and if so, is it intentional? Many black leaders say it is, and that the Voting Rights Act has been gutted. So let's remind ourselves what that act was with Professor Guy Charles, the founding director of the Center on Law, Race, and Politics at Duke University. Professor Charles, welcome.
Thank you.
So before we get to today, take us back, 65. It's still stunning to think that in many of our lifetimes, that these techniques were being used to keep African Americans from voting. Just remind us.
Well, we have to go back, not just to 1965 or 1964, but to really 1867, because really the Voting Rights Act was designed to address disenfranchisement techniques that were in effect in the late 19th century to early 20th century, and then through the first half of the 20th century until Congress passed the Voting Rights Act. And that included, in the late 19th century, lots of violence and lynchings against African Americans who sought the right to vote or to sought to exercise their right to vote at that particular time. It also included racial gerrymandering, poll taxes, racial disenfranchisement, changing the constitutions of many of the southern states in order to deprive African Americans of the right to vote and try to minimize the impact on white voters by including grandfather clauses, such as if your grandfather fought in the Civil War or had the right to vote before it was given to African Americans. So there were many devices that were used to deprive African Americans of the right to vote from, say, 1867 or so on until about 1964. So we're talking about a very long-term effort that resulted in the Voting Rights Act.
Well, you mentioned things like gerrymandering, designing voting districts to ensure that blacks would not win, or taxing people at the polls. But there are also the tests, the tests that people were required to pass.
The literacy tests. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It also included literacy tests. And so, for example, in some states, African Americans, when they went to vote, were asked to recite portions of the Constitution. And even intelligent African Americans who knew how to read and who had memorized their state constitution, some people memorized their state constitution in order to try to exercise their right to vote. If they missed a word or if the registrar did not understand exactly what they were saying, they were deprived of the right.
Well, we have oral history. Here's Daisy Harris Wade from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, in an interview that was recorded by the University of Southern Mississippi.
The registrar was a big white guy. When you go to his office, he wants you to interpret the Constitution. Regardless of how well you interpret that Constitution, it didn't satisfy him. He'd tell you it didn't pass. So they had a hearing down in the old federal building downtown in the basement. And in this hearing, one case in particular, was my science and chemistry teacher in high school. They questioned him, asked him how many times has he been down to register to vote. He said, oh, about 11 or 12 times. He said, well, what happens? He said, well, Mr. Lynn would always tell me I didn't pass. Then they brought in this white guy and asked him if he was registered to vote. He told him yes. He said, well, how far did you go in school? He said, he went to the second grade, the white guy. He said, well, can you read and write? He said, no, sir.
And he was still allowed to vote because he was white. Professor Charles, these kinds of things were happening. There were several lawsuits. There were several trials. But every time one of these was squashed, another one would pop up. And then finally, there seemed to be one moment where Americans could not ignore what was happening. This was the march from Selma to Montgomery. We've seen it depicted in film, in which state troopers beat the peaceful marchers. That seemed to be the straw.
That it was exactly the straw that broke the camel's back. It wasn't until we saw on television as a country the dignity of people fighting for their right to vote and being beaten down that we recognize and the country recognize that something needed to be done. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back because it showed the dignity of Americans fighting for a fundamental right.
So the law clamped down on some of these activities. What happened? Did blacks turn out and vote after the law passed?
The Voting Rights Act was tremendously effective. And the numbers on this really bear this out. Prior to the passage of the Voting Rights Act, the registration rate for African Americans, say, in Alabama was about 20 to 23%. Just a few years later, just 3 years later, it was 56%. And Arkansas, it was 49%. The Voting Rights Act had a dramatic effect, even just 2 or 3 years after passing, on the registration rate of African Americans and on elected officials who were black and then ultimately Latino.
Well, aspects of the Voting Rights Act have been taken up regularly in Congress, but then the Supreme Court in 2013 struck down that provision you mentioned that required certain states that had discriminated against voters in the past to get federal permission or preclearance before making any changes in procedures. With that struck down, we've seen a flood of voter ID laws, restrictions on early voting. In your state, as we said, in North Carolina, there's a trial determining if that state's law that reduces early voting days, ends same-day registration, et cetera, if that is legal. But this is not being determined by the federal government. This is in the courts. Do you think it's fair to say, as some do, that the law is gutted?
It is clearly the case that the type of oversight that we had with the Voting Rights Act, especially with sections 4 and Section 5, we no longer have. And that does allow certain types of voting restrictions that would not have been in effect prior to the Supreme Court's decision in the Shelby County case that allows those restrictions to go in effect. So there's no doubt about that. There are also complications, though, over different ideologies as to the importance of voting and burdens that ought to be placed on voting. So for the most part, Democrats think that voting ought to be made a lot easier. Republicans, for the most part, are much more concerned about voter fraud, and so they tend to restrict access to the ballot. And so you have competing ideologies. But there's no doubt that the Shelby County case has had an impact on allowing laws that would not have been in effect to go in effect and to undermine, in some respects, the right to vote.
Well, would you say things were different today? Obviously, African Americans are not as restricted as they were in the past. But for instance, in the attempts to have voter IDs, for instance, as you said, Republicans and people behind those laws say it's to prevent voter fraud. There's negligible voter fraud. Does it feel like the techniques from 50 years ago?
There is a way in which it does very much feel like the techniques of 50 years ago, but there's a way in which it's much more sophisticated than it was and much more nuanced than it was 50 years ago. 50 years ago, especially in the South, we were dealing with a one-party Democratic South that really did not care much for African Americans. And of course, today, African Americans are generally supportive of the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party supportive of them. You have two-party competition where you didn't have it before. So there's in part a racial battle going on, but there's in part an ideological and partisan battle going on. And it might be that the best way to think about the future is for all of us to care about the right to vote for all American citizens and to pass legislation that protects, universally protects the right to vote for all American citizens, no matter one's race, no matter one's party, no matter one's geography.
Do you ever find yourself, just one last thought, do you ever find yourself, as you do your work, looking at this history thinking, is that possible? If just 50 years ago, it was just 50 years ago, these techniques of keeping people from the polls, unbelievably transparent. Do you ever find yourself thinking, how could that have happened?
I do think about that. I also think about the fact that we haven't gotten to a place yet where we're taking voting as a fundamental right, and where restrictions on voting ought to be viewed morally suspicious, as bad public policy, and also as unconstitutional. And as the Supreme Court once said in a reapportionment case, voting is preservative of all other rights. And so we have to get to that place where all Americans, no matter what their race or ideology or where it is that they come from, where all Americans recognize that they have a fundamental right to vote, and they demand of the legislature, Congress, or their state to protect that right, because voting is preservative of all the other rights that we have.
Keith Charles, founding director of the Center on Law, Race, and Politics at Duke University, where he's also a professor of law and senior associate dean on the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. Professor Charles, thanks as always.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.